Welcome to Business Game Changers, where you'll hear expert tips on the big issues and the hottest trends to level up your business game. If you're building a career or building a business, this is Must Hear Radio. Here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Hello, and welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today, we are going to be looking at how DNA can be analyzed so that you can match your food and your nutritional choices to your own genetic makeup. We will be joined by Dr. Frederick Ambrinson, and he is the founder of Digital Nutrition. And his company focuses on personalized nutrition to your DNA. And with DNA becoming, you know, the ability to affordably test your DNA, it is becoming easier to provide insights into your metabolism, your personality, even your mental acuity and physical abilities. I know it can get kind of weird and strange and maybe creepy if it's not used right, but wouldn't you want to have the ability to make choices based on your own DNA and your nutrition being exactly matched to what you need? It is really a great way to make informed decisions. So he will be coming on and explaining all that. And he has a PhD in human genetics. He's an MIT Sloan Fellow and is currently an adjunct professor at Johns Hopkins University. His company is really impressive. He's teaming up with Roscoe Moore, who is a PhD and a former assistant surgeon general. And he has former CEOs of health companies and cybersecurity experts that are joining him. So it should be a really interesting conversation with him. But before we get into that, we're going to be continuing on with our Evolving with Your Money series. And Tom Shepard, the founder of and CEO of Shepard Financial, is coming today, and he's going to tell us about what the seven traits are that we could possibly have. I guess I just took their demo, and anybody can take it online, which I encourage you to do. And I learned that I am an investor, so I think that's pretty neat. I'm an investor, which makes sense. And one of the things they can say is that you know, I always look for things to invest in so that it can be used in the future. I'm always looking to build things, which is kind of related to being an entrepreneur. I think probably a lot of entrepreneurs are investors. But the dark side of being an investor is I can procrastinate and I can choose not to do certain things that I don't think are all that interesting. I can also be a risk taker. So I encourage you to go and do the analysis and see what type you are, because I think all of this will make more sense to you when Tom explains the whole, you know, seven traits and things. But now we're going to have Tom Shepard on, and he's going to start explaining what these traits are. Hey, Tom, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me back.
Well, I'm excited to hear all about evolving with your money, and now you're going to move on to explaining what these states are, the nature of money, and the states that you started, the natural states that we have. You started explaining it last time, but you didn't get into it that deeply, and now you are promising to give us some more information about it. So what do you have to say about it?
Yeah, I listened to what we talked about the last time, and what I thought I'd do is name the seven relationships people have. We have a financial name for each one. And then I'll, you know, go through the first one and tell you how, we kind of came up with it and, how it works, and, we'll see how that goes. But the first, relationship that people have with money is called reactive. The second one is spender. The third one is worker. Fourth is saver. The fifth one is investor. Six is lever, and the seventh nature is giver.
And these are the ones that you wanted to figure out for all the congressmen, right?
Right. I want to know. Yeah, I want to know who the givers are. They tend to be the most generous. and I want to know who the spenders are. I want to know who the investors are. I want to know the natures of all those congressional leaders. Because that's probably how they make the majority of their decisions. Because this is really about how you filter value. So more broadly than just money, this really does kind of define how people spend their other currencies too, including time, relationships and energy and health.
So what, give us a little bit more of the first nature on react.
Yeah, so the reactive nature comes out of recognizing that oftentimes people are motivated when there's not enough. In other words, we know people who put off their homework until the last minute, for example. That decision-making process of, well, I don't have enough money, and so now I need to go make it, or, you know, that chronic situation where the amount of income that's coming in and the amount of money that's going out is not enough, we call that a state of insufficiency. And so people who have a reactive relationship with money aren't motivated to act until that state of insufficiency hits almost like an instinctive level. We've seen people come into the office who have just been under this kind of stress for so long that they almost seem like caged animals. So reactive,
and that's a really reactive can be a really destructive, right?
Yeah, reactive can be destructive, but it can also be, the term reactive is not negative, it's neutral, but we see many people in this, who have this kind of a nature, almost overwhelmed by it, but dealt with properly, it can actually become a very, very powerful ally for somebody. All the natures have a positive side and a negative side.
Okay, so we're going to have you back next week, and you're going to give us some more information on some of these other natures. But thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Once again, if you want to find information about Shepherd Financial, I will have that up on my website at sarahwestall.com and also on my radio page at webtalkradio.net. But I really encourage you to go and do their application, their demo, and see what your trait is. Maybe you're an investor like me, or maybe you are a lover like Tom, or maybe you're something else. But it'll at least give you some insights. So now let's welcome Dr. Frederick Amundson to the show, and he's going to talk to us about the digital nutrition company that he's created and ways to analyze your DNA to personalize your nutrition. Hi, Frederick. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you. It's delightful to be with you today.
Your company has an important message that you do in your marketing literature, and you say, we won't exaggerate. We won't promote things that just to make money. What do you mean by that?
Well, I've been in the consumer world and the health world for a lot of years, and one of the things I've seen, including in the weight loss field, is a lot of hype and confusion. A lot of people just out there promoting things and seeing how much money they can make before anyone else catches on that it's not working.
That's wonderful.
And the thing with genetics is that genetics is not a perfect solution. When we work at the DNA level, we'll talk about this in greater detail. My view is I'll tell you pretty factually how close we are to, you know, telling you things. But it's never going to be perfect. It's never going to be, you know, if you do X, Y will happen. I think just to set the context, I view the use of DNA analysis for enhancing our lives the same way that I view the weather forecast. It's Tuesday. This morning they said that there's no chance of rain on Saturday and a slight chance of showers on Sunday. So what do I want to do? Do I want to have a picnic Sunday? Well, if I do and it rains, do I get angry? If I don't and it doesn't rain, do I get angry?
Well, why is that? Is that because there are so many other chemical things going on in our body that we don't understand yet? Or what?
Well, it's a lot of that. The human genome is an amazingly complicated, robust, powerful system. It keeps us going despite our best attempts to screw it up.
We're working hard at that.
We do. We can eat whatever we want. We do things. We stay up late. We can do physical things that sometimes cause our body pain. But the fact is that it has kept us around and kept us going for a very long time. And because of that, there's no simple linear equation between a specific gene that we're born with and some outcome.
Well, I want to get back to some of the formation of your company that I kind of started on that track with. You have some really great people that you're working with. You're working with Roscoe Moore, who was Assistant Surgeon General, and then other John Hopkins people, and also some corporate superstars that you kind of put together. How did that all come about?
Well, I've learned that I reach out to people and I meet them at events and so on, and I tell them what I'm doing. And if they are interested and they say, particularly say, wow, that's really interesting, I say, would you like to talk more? And if they say yes, I'll sit down with them and say, here's where I'm going. Is this something that you think you could help with? And most people will offer to help in terms of advice and guidance and thoughts. So for me, it's a question of reaching out and asking. Sometimes I meet them the way you and I met through LinkedIn or other online things. But, you know, I'm very straightforward. Here's what I'm doing. Here's why I think it's important. If this resonates with you, I'd like to talk to you about your helping in some capacity. And most people are willing to do it. And I discovered years ago that always aim for people at the top because they're the ones who make things happen.
Well, I think what's really fascinating is you're actually trying to take this genetic, you know, the DNA code and turn it into something that's very useful and that can really help people. But yes. one thing that you do is you avoid and ignore disease genetics, and instead you focus on the genetics of well-being and wellness. Why is that?
Because I'm going back to our roots in genetics. When I was growing up, and for most of the history of the world, we knew genetics as you take after your Aunt Susie's dance abilities, your Uncle John's math. You've got the physical, you take after your father, sport-wise, whatever. You're just like your brother. We've always talked about heredity in terms of practical everyday things, including how come I gain weight? Every one of my family's been thin versus how I can't lose weight because every one of my family's fat. We know this. It's only been in the last 30 or 40 years that genetics became entirely focused on disease. And this is largely because of the technology that let us look at the human genome for the first time. And naturally, the medical community zeroed in on that and said, look, if we can figure out how genes affect disease, we can have a huge impact on the health of people in terms of diagnosing and treating disease, which is true.
But if we focus on genes as far as wellness, can that also help with disease?
It absolutely does, and without making a direct connection. A really simple example, if I make you happy today, you will live longer. Happy people live longer than unhappy people.
That's interesting, actually. It's probably stress, maybe.
Right. Stress and just depression. But how do we get to be happy? We get to be happy by making choices that make sense to us and having them work out. Today, we don't live in the future that much. I mean, we can set aside discussions about saving money and so on. The fact is, we're talking on Tuesday afternoon. Later on today, you may leave your house and decide that you want to go out to eat. You want to go to a restaurant that's going to be interesting and fun and pleasant. That's part of your life experience.
I suppose if all of us were more in the present, we probably would be happier.
Well, I think it's important to stay in the present, but how do we affect the things that affect us? Take things like losing weight. I was in the weight loss field for 8 years as general counsel and chief scientist to a company, and I observe people just struggling to figure out what works and doesn't work. Well, if you know something about your genetics and you know how that relates to the food you're putting in your body, and you know that certain things are going to create a problem for you in either losing weight or gaining more weight than you should, you'll stop doing it. It isn't complicated. And if you decide you don't want to, you want to do it anyway, knock yourself out.
You'll be fat and don't blame anybody else.
But that's okay. I mean, I don't think we have to work on the premise that you're bad if you don't do what I tell you. I think that the world of genetics is something that opens up choices for you that you can make based on your own situation, your life setting, your economics, what you want to see happen in your world, and make those choices a little better than you can right now without the data. And I'd say that that'll make you happy. It'll reduce the illness downstream, particularly the chronic illnesses. And overall, it'll be a better outcome for you.
Well, what can the DNA testing provide to us? What kind of information?
Oh, wow. Well, we have 22,000 of those little buggers in our body. And so
there's those... it's enormous. But okay, so let me rephrase this question.
Sure.
What are you specifically trying to get the DNA to tell us?
Okay. Well, we're looking at the DNA that relates to your metabolism, your physiology, and your neurology, and particularly how nutrients affect those things. Depending on your body, your genetic type, a vitamin could have a different effect on you. You could be a fast processor of vitamin B6 or a slow processor. You could, you know, there's a really good example that talks about the relationship between nutrition and outcome and genes. There's a gene that relates to iron storage in the blood. It's called the HFE gene. And if you have one copy of this, if you have two copies of this particular version, you have excess iron in the blood. It's a condition, a medical condition called hemochromatosis. If you have no copies of it, your iron is like everybody else, normal. So you need iron in your food, you know, to make your iron levels normal. But here's the catch. If you have one copy of this particular gene, your iron levels are still normal, but very high on the high side. Well, the Europeans did an interesting study. They looked at athletes, and they found that almost half of them had one copy of the gene. And they also found that almost all of them in their training was having a lot of iron in their food. And they said, wait a minute, if you have one copy and you're having a lot of iron in your diet, your iron levels are going to be above normal. And that makes you less physically able to be an athlete.
So basically, stop that for those 50%, they need to have less iron.
And this as food intake, yes.
But because not. But and you found.
Against them.
But are, did you find that athletes tend to have one versus? I mean, they tend to be different than the regular population percentage wise.
I believe that the study found that 47% of the athletes studied had one copy.
Well, how much does the regular people, the main population, have?
It's close between 40 and 50%. I mean,
oh, okay. So it's not different.
Not vastly different.
Okay.
There was a slight difference because athletes are self-selected people. The key is though that the choice of what they were training with actually reduced their athletic ability marginally, but still, when you're a high performance athlete, you know, microseconds count, you know.
Oh yeah. When you're at the top of the, in your top of the world, every little difference counts.
Exactly.
So how significant are specific vitamins and minerals in general to the average person?
Well, since our bodies can't make vitamins and minerals and minerals, we have to bring them in from the outside. And so we need them. They're essential for our survival. And the question is, how much do we need? Now, the amount we need, I mean, there are ranges, you know, that the USDA and other government agencies put out. But basically, it goes like this. If your body is churning through the stuff really fast, if you think about an automobile engine, if you're getting 18 miles to the gallon, you need a lot more gas in your tank than if you get 40 miles to the gallon. Okay?
And so, if you don't get that, can it cause disease and tired and depression or what?
Sure. If vitamin deficiencies do cause diseases, folate deficiencies, for example, folic acid affects neural tube defects in newborns. Yeah, there. If you go around the world and you look at malnutrition in different countries, one of the significant causes of the illnesses is, in fact, vitamin and mineral deficiencies. We need them. We also don't need them, though, in huge excess, because if you have them in excess, your body can just get rid of it, but sometimes it actually has a counter effect as well. So
it can cause problems.
You need something in the right areas, and right is in quotation marks because right depends on what you are.
Well, now how different are we from each other? I mean, we all kind of think we're about the same, but that's not true.
Oh, it's not true. I mean, just walk down the street. How different are we? Do we look? How different do we appear? We are very different.
So we all might need different levels of vitamin C, and we all might need different levels of vitamin A. And if we're eating the same diet, it might cause you to be depressed, but it could cause me to have a ton of energy and feel great.
Exactly.
And so
that's exactly right.
So by understanding this, it could really change how we just our quality of life.
It'll change things, and it goes really to the point that we are all different, but we're all different in normal ways. I say to people, we're differently normal. And being different and being normal means that we have to figure out how our differences, how we can optimize around our differences. You know, another genetic variant that's fun to look at is that there's a genetic basis for having endurance versus power as athletes. Well, you can train yourself to convert your body from power to endurance and vice versa. But if you're naturally wired to be an endurance athlete, then you probably ought to be thinking in terms of doing things that involve endurance and vice versa for power. So we're different. And differences are neat and differences are good. If we understand them, we're in better shape.
Can you test for whether you're more prone to be an endurance athlete or a power athlete?
Yes.
Wow, and that's something in your genetic code.
It's in the genetic code.
Well, yes. Is it plausible? Does it make sense? Is it practical to test for an individual's DNA? I mean, can we even afford to do it in any mass way?
Well, that's the best part. I mean, years ago, it was prohibitively expensive. But today, depending on the technology you use, the 23andMe, which is tests for almost 600,000 different genes, their cost is $100.
Oh, so I could give you $100, give you some of my blood or something, and you could give me my...
You don't even need the blood anymore.
What do you do?
And, you know, 23andMe uses spit. We use a dry swab. We'll test for, we pick out 100 markers because we don't need the other stuff, the other data that's in the genome, because we're focusing on the interaction between you and what you put in your body nutrition-wise.
Okay, well, I want to know what I am. So if I want to do this, how do I get you my information? Do I just send you a random Q-tip with my swab of cheek in an envelope and say, here?
Almost. Well, for 23andMe, they'll send you a little kit in the mail. When you send them the $99, in our case, we'll send you a kit that will take a cheek swab and you'll send it back to us. We're still working on our first launch on the mobile app. So we're not ready for prime time, but, it'll be a simple cheek swab. Like it'll look like a popsicle stick and you'll be able to scrape the inside of your cheek, stick it in an envelope and mail it. And it's safe and harmless. And when we tested it out, we did it on people aged 2 to 85.
Oh, that's so then you can send me back a report. You're eating too much of this, which is causing you to do this. I mean, like my inner tube around my stomach might be because of I have a certain too much mineral of some sort, or I'm more prone to dairy, and my genome will tell me that?
Well, our model is really a little different. We don't want to start having you feel bad about yourself. So because there's a lot of guilt associated with our health and our well-being. So our model is that you'll be able to take the data that we have, that we give you. You'll be able to go to a store, scan with your cell phone the product code of, say, a vitamin on the shelf in GNC or Walmart or CVS, and instantly get a score from 0 to 100 on how closely that product matches your genetics. And then you can decide whether that score is good or bad. You can decide whether you want to buy the product or not based on comparing it to other scores. But our view is we'd rather give you the score and comparative scores, just like the weather. Here's the score. You decide what you want to do. But we don't want to be in the business of telling you that you're in the wrong level or you're too much of this or too little.
But if I tend to stay in the 90s or something, however you, the top range,
right. Yeah.
Then is the likelihood that it'll be easier for me to keep weight off, it'll be easier for me to be naturally without depression, without having to take drugs, easier for me to, you know, I won't be as sleepy, I'll have more energy. More than likely, that's what will occur if I stay within a high range of foods that match my genetic code.
Ultimately, yes. The closer you match things, the closer you'll be able to achieve some of these other goals. Weight loss, though, for example, means that ultimately you do have to eat less calories.
I mean, there's just and you need to. Well, once you get into your 40s, too, your muscle, especially for women, is. I can't speak for men because I'm a woman, and all I know is that if I don't exercise, my muscles are pretty soft.
So it happens. Age, our muscles tend to we kind of add fat. We tend to shift it to different parts of our body. This is the natural aging process. And yes, but again, it's all related to our genetics, and the more we understand it, the better off we are. In the weight loss example. There's a gene that the people in Toronto discovered, a variant that has a person eat roughly 2 pounds more sugar a month than other people.
Oh, wow.
Now, is that bad? Well, it depends. If you're 102 pounds and you're in good physical shape, who cares how much sugar you eat? But if you're 80 pounds overweight and you're not doing anything, that extra sugar can make a difference. And when I was doing weight loss, I discovered that some people didn't count Snickers as part of their diet.
I just ignore that part. I ignore the Snickers I have every day.
Yeah. And it's human nature. And human nature is we tend to try to do things. But if you understand that you're wired to eat more sugar and you discover... Well, I'll give you a real case example. A woman in her 60s, overweight, argued that, in fact, the data was wrong. The DNA was wrong because she loved sweets. And when she was told, it's in your DNA, this is you can argue about the science, but the DNA says you do not eat more sugar. She said, well, when I was a little girl growing up in Indiana, my parents didn't let me eat sweets. Maybe that's what's going on. The epiphany here was, she thought her whole life that genetically she was wired to be fat, to eat sweets. The breakthrough was, no, she actually learned it. Now, that doesn't make it easier for her to lose weight.
But well, you mean genetically she's not, it's not a chemical thing, it's a mental thing.
Right.
Oh, she learned it was a mental thing. That's, right. But yeah. That's a hard thing to learn too, because now you have to mentally retrain yourself. Where if it's genetics, if you're genetically, predisposed to eat sugar, wouldn't your body take it in better and you wouldn't gain weight then?
Well, maybe. And some people do and other people don't. They take it in and they do gain weight.
And so, their body wants it.
Yeah.
Your body wants it and you eat it and you gain weight.
Precisely. And the trick is you really want to understand who you are. And if you understand you're wired to eat more sugar and then you say, well, I don't like the outcome. Let's change the way I'm doing things. And it gives you a focus you never had before because you're not good or bad. It's not your fault. We're not blaming you. You were just born this way.
You just are what you are, and it's good to know what you are so that you can manage it. It's kind of the 101 of management. Know the problem. Don't put your head in the sand. Understand it. You can't solve it until you understand what the problem is.
Exactly.
The source of it.
And it goes to the issue of control. I think I would use an analogy of driving into work. If you're driving into work and they say, don't use this road, there's been a major accident, the road is closed. You can sit on that highway for 3 hours and wait for it to open. Or you could say, well, wait a minute. I don't like being on this road and have to sit there. I'm going to take another route. And you get to work and you figure it out.
Well, but can't, don't you think that it could also be a crutch for people? I'm just predisposed to eating sugar, so I'm just going to be fat.
Well, I'm sure people can take refuge in that I'm fated to be fat forever. I don't think that's in my experience. It's not a really big percentage of the people, because most people want better outcomes. People who are overweight really don't like being overweight. Forget all the health things and the scare. They don't like it because they get tired. They don't like it because physically they don't like how they look. When I was doing weight loss in the 90s, and I would go around the country and talk to people in weight loss, most of whom, 4 out of 5 people losing weight are women, and most of those are in their 30 to 45-year-old age range. And the most common reason that these women want to lose weight is they wanted to look good for their husbands and their significant others.
Oh, wow. So usually for themselves, though, I think.
Yeah.
But and that makes sense. People just want to be the best self they can be. It's interesting that 4/5 are in the, you know, under 45. And then once you get to a certain age, you just don't care as much anymore, percentage wise.
Well, a lot of 3 out of 5 overweight people have given up trying to lose weight.
Oh, interesting. That's why.
Because they can't find the diet that really works. And because, yeah, I mean, it's very frustrating to be overweight these days, because not only you can't find the right diet to match who you are genetically, then you're filled with guilt and blame. You know, you're told that if you're overweight, you're stupid, you're lazy, you're indolent, you're irresponsible, you're going to kill yourself, you're going to have deprived your family of, and those aren't winning messages. Those aren't messages that inspire people.
Well, would you think that the food now, the processed food, is filled with crap that will be low on your scale?
I think it's different crap. I think food evolves much as we do. We really don't know what was in the food of the 19th century. You know, if you think about it, we don't know what was in the soil. We don't know how they processed it. We don't know how they kept it. We have processed foods today. Not everybody is suffering. My own personal view is the reason we have the excess weight problem is not because of the processed food so much, but because in evolution, we've never had the ability to preserve food. And therefore, throughout history of the world, if there was food in front of you, you had to eat it, because it would go bad within the day.
Yeah, but how come then when you go to France, where they have, and some other countries, you know, I was just in France last year, and you go to France and almost no one is overweight. They don't have a food problem. They have food everywhere, but nobody's overweight. And I wouldn't think that they're just different people than we are. So I would think it has to do with our food supply.
It's a combination. Well, genetically, the French are different. You know, the French are the French, and then you have, you know, you can look at population clusters. But yeah, there are differences in the way the food we have. There are differences in the availability of it, how we choose to consume it,
and genetically.
You know, I don't want to exonerate the food industry and say they don't contribute, but I don't want to castigate them either and say they're totally to blame. I think it's a very complicated issue. And for me, the solution to get at it is to focus on your DNA individuality and give you the tools and the power to start making choices to make your life better.
Oh, that's great. Because then you get to the source of the problem. It's not everybody pointing fingers at each other. It's like, well, hey, let's figure it out. This is what it really is.
Right. And I think that's where, to me, this is the most exciting part of the Human Genome Project. For the first time, we can look at ourselves without start yelling and pointing and blame and say, who am I? How do I fit into the world? How can I make the world reflect me better so I get better outcomes?
Well, I noticed that you're not concentrating on the U.S. market at first. Why?
I'm sorry if that impression was there. I'm concentrating on U.S. market, but we are definitely thinking of Europe and Asia as markets. The U.S. market is a different market, but that is going to be our first market.
Oh, awesome. Okay, so the U.S. is your first market, and you're going to just do it worldwide.
Do it worldwide, because one of the nice things about this approach, and we've talked to people in different countries of the world, because we're not giving you advice, there's no cultural overlay. It's a score. It's based on your genes. And if you're in Brazil and you get a 92 on a product, and you had the same product in Canada, you get a 92 if you were genetically the same. I mean, it doesn't matter what language you speak. It doesn't matter where you're from. Your genetic makeup interacts with the way you put food in your body. It results in some kind of scoring that we can do. And you then make choices. So it lends itself to personal empowerment. The second thing is in Europe and China, they have very long histories of personal well-being and personal holistic health. DNA at the level we're talking about fits in with their thousands of years of holistic health tradition.
Well, that's interesting. I think for our country, it'll be a really great educational experience. I can't wait to get mine figured out. So you're going to talk to me first, and I'm going to be the first person that you test.
That's a deal.
Okay, because I want to figure this out. And my daughter, too. I'm going to get my daughter in this. So go ahead.
By the way, Sarah, that you opened up a really great point. As parents, we have the added responsibility of trying to figure out how to make choices for our children. And the world is complicated enough in terms of figuring out what they should be watching on TV or on the internet. But if we know something about their bodies from the DNA point of view, we can begin structuring their nutrition around those things to get better results for them as children, which, of course, will result in better results for them as adults. Duh.
Well, and that's what I'm looking for, even for my daughter, because I know she has certain foods that causes her to bloat and things, and she hates it. And this could really help us. I'm like, Oh, I'm excited about it. So now, when do you think this will be available?
Well, right now I'm out talking to investors. I learned something in the software field where I spent a lot of years. Don't do something halfway. You know, don't put out something bad because you never recover from it.
Oh, software? No. And then you got this kludgy piece of crap that you just wish you never would have.
You got it.
Yes.
You know, it's like a kiss on both cheeks. You know, you're out of the game. So I'm raising money to put an alpha version out, and that'll be a 3-month target from the time we get funded. And then another 3 to 6 months to get the beta version, which is more robust. Because there's a lot of work to be done on the back end to really make sure it's tight scientifically and mathematically. So I figure a year before we're ready to launch the full version, economically.
Okay, so right now you're looking for investors and things, and how can they contact you?
Well,
because this is a great, I love this idea.
Well, thank you. obviously, my email address, they can go. It's F as in Frederick, D as in David, Abramson, spelled Abramson, F.D. Abramson, at digitalnutrition.net.
And you'll send it to me, and I'll have it up on the radio page. So if anybody is interested in getting hold of him for any more, you know, to invest and to look into it further, you can go to my radio page. And then also, is there anything where people can just go and research and read about this stuff?
Well, they can go to the website, digitalnutrition.net.
Oh, and you have a little demo people can do.
Yeah, and I'd like people to do the demo, because what the demo will do, you go to the demo and it will randomly assign you a genetic type using 4 of the markers that we work with. Then there are 13 vitamin products on there. You get to pick 3. Pick 3, you'll see scores come up. Do it a second time. You can go back and recycle. You'll get a new random assignment. Pick the same 3 vitamins and watch the scores will change probably.
Well, now, that's essentially how it's going to work on a mobile app, but will it be with everything on this? Like, we can scan a UPC code, and then it can tell me whether the ho-hos work good for my body?
Ultimately, yes. In the beginning, we're starting with vitamins because they're chemically, in terms of what's inside the bottle when you buy it, it's all on the label.
So you're going to slowly build your database.
That's right.
You got to build the data. The back-end database has to be built. So you're going to first build the back-end database for vitamins and then move on to all sorts of different types of foods and things.
Exactly.
That'll be interesting. Now, that will be a big project.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a growth path, which we've seen in other companies like Google, who, you know, you come in with your first version and you make it more robust and you keep adding and you keep making it better and better. This is the world of technology. It's a lesson we've learned in software, and that's our plan. So that you'll be able to actually take a picture with your cell phone of a prepared plate in your mother's house, and we'll be able to estimate the nutrient content of the plate.
Well, how do you do that without knowing what the sauce was put into the sauce?
You'd be amazed at how smart some of the technology is. It wouldn't be perfect. Clearly. I mean, you know, if someone put a whole stick of butter in the potatoes versus one slice, it would be hard to tell that from a picture. But we would know that white potatoes on the plate.
Okay, I get that. Yeah. You know what generally potatoes are, but you could probably move to a certain point where they could chemically. Now, this is in the future. If we could get to a point where we could chemically break things down quickly and then be able to tell. But that'll take some. That's not in the mix for a while.
Well, there's a smile on my face. One of the things that we'll do in between, I've actually talked to restaurants, and restaurants will confidentially give us the really ingredients of what they make, and they'll barcode or QR code the menu, and you would be able to scan the menu and get a match based on what you want to eat. For that restaurant.
Oh, that is great. So you could go to Applebee's or wherever you're going and figure out whether their, you know, tuna melt works for you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a path. The restaurant people love the idea, particularly the smaller privately owned restaurants. And as I asked one of them, I said, why do you want to do this? He said, because I don't care what you eat as long as you eat it here.
Well, and think of the power of marketing to say that. A lot of restaurants are trying to do that by having their calorie count or they're partnering with Weight Watchers and things. But to be able to have your whole thing tell you how it matches your genetic code, that's a major competitive advantage at first until everybody does it.
Right. But this is to me the evolution of where it's all going. And we're the tip of the spear. It's going to happen. I mean, because this is the natural evolution of how to use our DNA data.
I told the president of US West back in the day that everything comes down to databases. This was like 20 years ago. I said, everything is going to come down to how we use databases. And this is an example. To make this product really work, it's going to come down to databases. But we need the technology to figure out what our genes are, obviously. But after that, it's not useful unless we have a whole database of stuff to back it up.
Exactly. And you're absolutely on target. The last piece of the puzzle was getting the data, the DNA data, at a low enough cost that it could be affordable by everybody. And that's here now. So And we're not doing the whole genome. So it's not a $1,000 genome. That's an important distinction. We're picking off the right targets so that we know exactly what we're doing. It's more of a laser approach.
Sure, you're doing the slice because you know what those particular markers are. Well, I'm all in, so you got to tell me when it's coming.
I'll keep you posted.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Frederick, for joining us today, and I look forward to getting your contact information, and we'll have that up for you.
Thank you so much, Sarah, and you have a wonderful day. Yeah, you're in Minnesota, right?
We're in the Twin Cities.
The Twin Cities, been there, loved it, always enjoyed it.
It's wonderful in the summer. It's just amazing.
Yes, I know.
It's green. It's like you're in a, you know, you go to other places and they don't have the rain. You come here and we're just all green. It's so nice.
I'm smiling. Yes, I know. It's really good.
Okay. Well, have a great day.
Well, thank you so much. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Once again, if you want to find out more information about these companies, either Shepherd Financial or Digital Nutrition, go to my website at sarahwestall.com and you can get their contact information. For now, you have a wonderful day.